Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
How's it going, everybody? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn for another Packers podcast at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Bob, how we doing?
Good morning. Monday morning. Monday noon, Tyler.
Monday morning is right. And I'm trying to think back to last year. We did these on Wednesdays and Thursdays, I believe. So yeah. Not quite sure what day we'll be set on during the regular season, but
we'll keep it fluid.
We'll keep it fluid. Good word.
Okay.
Well, we had to put in a little black keys there because, A, they're going to be at the Bradley Center Tuesday night with Cage the Elephant. Looking forward to that concert. That should be a fun time. And B, that was tightened up, Bob. And the Packers might need to tighten up that defense after a rough opener in Seattle.
Got to make the corrections, Ty, you know?
Hit the targets, make the corrections. What targets weren't hit in that game, Bob?
Well, let's see. The run D didn't hit the targets, right? The passing offense didn't hit the targets. There was a lot. There was many. So where do we want to start here today, Tyler?
Well, I mean, a lot's been written, said. We've got a lot up on jsonline.com already, but we'll try to verbalize it here best we can. I guess one thing that kind of jumps out is, as I kind of said before, San Francisco game once upon a time, they wanted to take their brand out to San Francisco and try to take it to the 49ers. The word of the summer this summer was dictate. Offensively, they would dictate with the no huddle. Defensively, they would dictate with the matchups. Elephants, Julius Peppers, Mike Neal, Nick Perry, Clay Matthews, they were going to create these mismatches. Boy, there wasn't much dictation going on at CenturyLink Field. 36-16 loss for the Packers. The bar has been set in the NFC, and the Packers are below that bar.
So in fairness, let's say this in fairness right away, could any team have gone out to CenturyLink that night and dictated anything?
Probably not.
I mean, I took a shot and picked Seattle to win it all again, and certainly not backing off that.
Well,
they're a young, good team, man, and they got a quarterback who is – his poise is incredible for a third-year guy. You talked to him out there. He is an amazing player. I mean, he's there in the top five or six in the league. He's got to be.
Yeah.
The guy can run. He can play. He's a pretty darn good player.
You know, Seattle kind of – I think it was Pete Carroll kind of compared him to like a point guard. Or Darrell Bevell said he's like a point guard out there, like a John Stockton you know, just somebody in total control of the situation where he doesn't need to spread the field to four or five receivers and take all these chances and all this risk. But, man, he is in just complete control. But I don't know. To answer your original question, I don't know if anybody could beat Seattle in Seattle. I don't know if that's necessarily what fans wanted to see. I mean, they want to see a win, but they wanted to see more than the effort they saw. I mean, last year in San Francisco, Green Bay lost, but they had a really good effort out there. I mean,
they really did.
They played hard. I mean, yep. They took it to Kaepernick in the read option. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, all those incredible plays they made along the sideline. The no huddle looked sharp. I just don't know what they can really hang their hat on after this game. I mean, it was a pretty uninspired matchup. I mean, in the third quarter, things really began to unravel for Green Bay. It was somewhat of a close game there, 17-10 at halftime. Brian Bulaga goes down. You know, a lot of ifs and buts involved, but overall, I just think the fans wanted to see more than what they saw on national TV.
All right, so let's go now to Richard Sherman, should we? I mean, this is what we're both inferring, you know. I mean, when you dictate, you use the strength of your best player, Aaron Rodgers. Some say he's the best player in the league. You got Jordy Nelson, who's at the absolute peak of his powers. And Mike McCarthy loves Jarrett Boykin, And you got Randall Cobb, and you got a passing game that's been going for 9 years. It's supposed to be cutting edge, and it's supposed to be able to beat anybody, I assume. And so now Richard Sherman stands over on that right outside on the as the Packers offense looks at it and avoided one-third of the field. Now, you wrote a column on that the other day, avoiding one-third of the field, which didn't help the rest of their offense, let's face it. All right, Tyler, what are some of your thoughts here?
Yeah, all right, in theory, if you're Green Bay, and Mike McCarthy, when I asked him this at his press conference, he kind of said they did what they wanted to do. I mean, in the no huddle, Jordy Nelson lines up on the left side. It's easier offensively for him to line up there, and that's just kind of how it worked out. You'd like to have Byron Maxwell on your best receiver, and Nelson took advantage of some things. But as the game kind of progressed, I mean, you saw it too. Earl Thomas, he could start cheating that other direction a little bit. And as he starts cheating, all right, then maybe you take 2, 3, 4 shots, at least open it up, stretch the defense a little bit. And like I wrote, I mean, yeah, Richard Sherman is Richard Sherman. I believe he picked off 13% of the passes thrown his way last season. But you're Aaron Rodgers. You're an MVP quarterback. You're somebody who can fit the ball into windows that no other quarterback can. You know, Jared Boykin isn't an elite wide receiver. And, you know, maybe I'd have to look at the full all-22 kind of look. I don't know if he was open a lot. There were a couple times it seemed like he was. But it didn't look like the quarterback was looking that direction. It didn't seem like offensively the Packers were even glancing to that half of the field. It was very, very predictable from a passing game standpoint, where when you have Aaron Rodgers, you have Mike McCarthy, you have all these weapons on the outside, predictable is about the last thing you would expect out of Green Bay. I don't care who you're playing. Get into attack mode to take a chance here and there.
I mean, I think the only time I've ever seen that by a Green Bay opponent was Deion Sanders with Dallas. Favre, I think there was a game one time in Green Bay. Deion may have run one back. That might have been the only ball thrown over there. Sherman can be beat. He doesn't have a great 40 time.
Yeah.
This is Jordy freaking Nelson. Jordy Nelson's one heck of a player. He's special. He was the best player on this team last year. Send him over there and send a message. Attack the guy with these two great players.
They fell right into Seattle's trap. I mean, okay, you want Nelson on that side. You want to go after Maxwell. That's the trap that Seattle kind of baits you into. Maxwell isn't a slouch. I mean, he had an interception. He played okay after a rough stretch, but I mean, you're playing right into Seattle's hands if that's what you're going to do. You know, you didn't see receivers going into motion to that side. You didn't see much of anything, really, and a lot of hesitation. I mean, it's not like Aaron Rodgers played this atrocious game, but for him to yards per pass attempt, like 5.7, about 3 yards less than his career average. They just couldn't stretch the field. They couldn't get anything going. You saw that one play where he could run for a first down and just kind of fires it over Nelson's head. Just uncharacteristic, and it wasn't near what we saw all summer. I mean, all summer, all pre-exhibition season, this no huddle was kind of clicking, and this first-team offense looked great. It didn't carry over. As Roger said, this is the Seattle Seahawks. This is a great defense. Maybe it's an aberration, but you have to think that even if they go out there against the Jets and are unstoppable, this game, this opponent is going to be on their mind. I mean, if they want to get to the Super Bowl, if they want to be a contender, this is the team you have to beat eventually.
Yep, it is. Tremendous amount of things can happen in the next 16 weeks
right.
Until they might meet again, you know, in some big playoff game. I mean, yeah, the teams we think are good right now, Monday morning, who knows, 5 weeks from now we might be so down on these teams, you know.
Right.
The ones we're high on, right? That's the way the league is. It's so unpredictable. But barring injury, Seattle should be pretty darn good. Now, you were in that locker room for several days this week, Tyler. What is the what's the atmosphere that comes across with those Seahawks? What's it like out there?
Well, I mean, I guess I wasn't in Green Bay leading up to this game talking about, you know, this opponent, this matchup. I can only imagine it was somewhat of a quiet confidence, I'm sure they would call it, and just kind of being, you know, saying the right thing, knowing what to say, when to say it, mm-hmm. and going into this game calm and cool.
Yep.
Boy, being out there in Seattle, they were about, I think as I wrote, the Packers played scared. Well, the Seahawks sounded about as unscared as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Cliff Avril vowing to hit Aaron Rodgers as much as he can, to be in his face, to knock him off his spot. Jeremy Lane, I mean, he's a slot cornerback who, you know, three quarters of the football world doesn't even know. stepping into this role. He's going to face off against Randall Cobb and saying, yeah, you got to get in his grill. You got to knock him around. He can be stopped. Randall Cobb can be stopped. And I think he called, what do you call, wide receivers in general, goody two shoes, or I'd have to look back at my story. It's on there. He said they don't like to be hit. It was one after another. Bruce Irvin, he said, yeah, we spooked Green Bay in that first game. He said they spooked Green Bay, and then he was going to pray for Corey Linsley against Brandon Mebane. I mean, this is just the kind of free-spirited, free-speaking swagger that starts from Richard Sherman all the way down that ticks off a lot of outsiders. You know, we're not in those Packer position meetings, but you can bet they're in there talking that the Seahawks, they do all this talk and they do this and that. Well, they do, but they back it up as well. Yeah. And that's what they did. I mean, they played a very unscared, unafraid kind of game. And just being out there in that locker room leading up to the game, that's what stood out most is, you know, we're around the Packers. And there's something to be said, you know, for approaching the job the way they do. And they won a Super Bowl of their own. They've been winners year in and year out. But Seattle just does something a little different that seems to be working for them right now.
So had this game been in Lambeau with perfect weather on a beautiful night, you almost got to think the same result. I mean, I didn't think the noise was a factor. Green Bay knows how to handle noise. They practice in that jarring, crazy music all summer.
I really didn't think noise was a factor at all. No, I mean, it's such a great storyline for everybody leading up to a game like that, but it didn't seem like it was a factor.
I just outplayed them.
I mean, in the Lambeau Field mystique, is there much mystique left for an opponent kind of walking into Lambeau Field to play Green Bay?
It's not a real loud place, Lambeau.
No.
It's not an intimidating place. They built up that south end, but last year you don't see any ugliness from the Green Bay fans. They've never been like that. Mm-hmm. The game probably would have been pretty much the same, right?
Probably.
Based on between the lines, what we saw. Yeah.
So
Seattle's just better. Right now they are.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, there are a few players in that Packers locker room. Give them credit. TJ Lang, you can always count on him to kind of provide the right perspective. He said this was a reality check for us. Called it a reality check, and it is. I mean, you know where you stand after a game like that. So let's move on to, you know, topic number two, Bob. We talked about Sherman, about the Packers offense kind of playing scared, avoiding half the field pretty much. What about that defense? They go lighter up front of the defensive line. They stick with Brad Jones and A.J. Hawkins inside linebacker. They add Julius Peppers. They go with the elephant position. They want to run a 4-3 to a certain extent. And Seattle just kind of ran right through them with Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, they did. Now, all right, let's look at it from this standpoint. Would Seattle have done that to any defense? No, I don't think they would have.
Why is that?
There would have been some defenses that would have withstood that run better than Green Bay. That was kind of pathetic, let's face it. So I answered my own question. All right, so some of the problems here, Tyler. Mike Daniels was horrible. He admitted it. Probably the worst game he ever played.
He said it was a pathetic game. He put it on himself afterward.
I mean, granted, you know, he's playing right in their 3-4 base, and he was, you know, playing three technique when they were in the 4-3 and when they were in the sub stuff. But, I mean, James Carpenter is a massive guard, 6'5", about 330. But he makes mistakes and he doesn't have great stamina. He kind of dominated Mike Daniels. He covered him up, engulfed him, moved him. That just can't go on. And there are better guards than James Carpenter, a lot better guards. So Daniels, somehow they've got to get that short up on that right side of the line.
I mean, we all love Mike Daniels from a media perspective in terms of he's going to tell it like it is, and he's going to want to bring that nastiness, that edge, that mean streak to Green Bay. But I remember writing a story on him last year. When you look across the NFL as a whole, I think there was only one or two other defensive linemen who are 6 foot or shorter. Just from where he is, from a physical standpoint, how he's built, how he's made up, is this a guy who can play 16 games as a base defensive end in whatever scheme you're running?
I mean, they totally believe he can, you know?
They do.
He will play 10 times better than this most Sundays. I'm convinced of that. When I rank those players on importance on Labor Day from 1 to 53, I put him number 2, and I thought about that decision long and hard. I put him over Lacy and over Matthews, who were 3 and 4. I believe in Mike Daniels as a rusher, and I think he's he's okay at least against the run. But boy, I had never seen him have to play 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen him play half football games all summer or less. So that was a bit disconcerting if you're Dom Capers and Mike McCarthy.
So, yeah, if you're Capers and McCarthy, are you more concerned about what you saw out of Mike Daniels, or are you more concerned about your situation in nose tackle where there's no B.J. Raji and LaTroy Guyon really got stood up early on in that game?
Guyon came on late in the game. You know, he only played 9 snaps in the preseason, right? Exhibition season.
Yeah, not a fan of the word preseason, are you? Can you explain to the listeners? I mean, we've talked about it. Why do you despise the word preseason?
The league's initial game for this August game was exhibition, okay? And that's the way it was. And then they came up with a sanitized word, preseason, and they can come up with it all they want. I'll never recognize it, and I'll just keep calling them exhibition games. And Tyler, you were with me on that for your first 3 years, and now I've seen some preseason slip into your copy.
I snuck a few on you there.
Along with Mr. Silverstein, we've discussed that with an esteemed colleague. They are exhibition games.
I could see the smoke just coming out of your ears as your face are red in the sanitized preseason.
Yeah, right. Eyewear, dinnerware, tableware, right?
What other little little things like that out of the NFL kind of rub you the wrong way, Bob?
Well, let's not go there. Right. Come on, Tyler. For another show. Yeah. What were we talking about? Oh, the nose tackle situation.
Okay.
So Guyon, he played better in the fourth quarter. Maybe that doesn't mean anything, but I mean, he was starting to get off the ball. There was some penetration. He wasn't getting moved as much. It was better. Mike Pinnell was inactive. If they were in a 3-4 as their base, he would not have been inactive. So that was a tip-off. Pinnell's got to get some shot. He's got to get a shot. I mean, we got to see if he can play against good people. And he could take Guyon's snaps. He could take his place. Who knows?
Why not Josh Boyd?
You know, he's really more of an end. But they got to have a third end.
Yeah,
behind Jones and Daniels. They don't have a third end. They only got 5 D linemen, so they were going to try to keep him at end, which that's where he played.
We're talking about so many unknowns here. I mean, LaTroy Guyon has, you know, played the whole summer. Mike Pinnell's an undrafted rookie. Josh Boyd, you know, difference. Why not pick up the phone and just call Ryan Pickett? See, maybe they have. You know, I haven't heard anything here. Maybe they have checked in to see what kind of shape he's in. But you know he was your nose tackle the last couple seasons. You know what he can offer, maybe one more season. After that game, it would just seem to make sense.
How many times are you going to see Marshawn Lynch coming at you? He's one of the 2 or 3 best backs in the league, all right? So most of the time you're not going to get gashed because of the ability of the running back.
Yeah, but I don't know. They got gashed by Toby Gerhart late last season. And
they did.
Le'Veon Bell.
With Pickett, with Jolly.
With Pickett, with Jolly. Right, they were in there.
They don't want the fat people. And more power to them. I mean, this is Mike McCarthy's idea. It's not Capers. I think this is Mike McCarthy's brainchild. He wants to go with these athletic people. He wants to use a lot of people. He wants better pursuit and chase. Sounds good to me. He wants to do those kind of things. But when he went to Seattle, when his defense couldn't hear, and he had to stop Marshawn Lynch, it flopped. So now they go on.
Well, guess what? They play the New York Jets next week, who rushed for 212 yards on 34 attempts. Ivory, Chris Johnson. They got a lot of different styles of backs back there. We're going to learn a lot about that run defense.
We know where the Jets are going to attack, don't we? Right between the middle, between the tackles. So
yeah, it's not going to be a Geno 911 show here.
It won't be.
All right, so, I mean, they unleash this 4-3. Is the verdict still out then? Yeah, they got to give this a little bit more time.
Well, they played this 4-3. They're calling it quad. They played that thing in the first half, like 15 snaps compared to, like, I think it was 2 or 3 of the 3-4. Second half, they junked the 4-3 and went back to the 3-4 mm-hmm. to stop their run. So I don't know where it goes, you know. Now, there's another expression people love to use at my sentence there. I don't know where this goes going forward.
Oh, yeah, you hate that.
Can we say in the future?
I think I've written going forward a few times. You just cringe forward when you see that.
Yeah. Okay, Ty, you want to talk about the ILBs?
Brad Jones has become today's, I don't know, who have been the pinatas past for fans.
Jared Bush. Estes Hood. Nickelback's taken the burden.
Yeah, they do.
Years,
they do. Bill Schrader probably had a little run there.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, so Brad Jones, the fans aren't happy, and rightfully so. I mean, that was a very, very rough game out of a veteran.
Let's be real. It was horrendous.
It was horrendous.
Yep.
Three missed tackles, two back-breaking penalties. I mean, right when they get a little bit of life in Peppers and Matthews, they sack Wilson. It's exactly what you want to see out of your new defense penalty. The last drive, I mean, we were talking about this in the press box. That last drive for Seattle, it was a carbon copy out of the Chicago and Philadelphia games last year where the defense has to get off the field. Yeah. They have to give their offense another shot, and they couldn't do it. That started with the Brad Jones penalty, and he dropped the interception at the start of the game, which could have changed a lot.
Yes, he did.
Man, I mean, he played 70 snaps. Sam Barrington played zero snaps. Are you surprised by that?
He was the dime linebacker over A.J. Hawk, over Barrington, you know. I mean, they believe in Brad Jones. Brad Jones had a quad injury during the week. He missed some time. I have no idea if that affected him during the game. On that touchdown run, the 21-yard run down to set up a touchdown, that was underneath Matthews. But really, the problem with the play was Brad Jones. He just got blown up at the point of attack.
Did he?
He got blown up so bad that Hawk couldn't even scrape behind him. He just screwed up the entire play, and that was horrific. He got Velcroed, man.
So last year, I mean, he wasn't exactly Patrick Willis last season at inside linebacker, but he was battling a lot of injuries, what, hamstring injury, ankle, I believe.
Maybe.
Might have been an ankle too, a couple injuries. And, Winston Moss and the coaches, they kind of pointed to these injuries and how it affected him. And I remember back in May, talking to Moss, he said, we have faith in Brad Jones. I mean, he's our starter till I'm told otherwise. And
I mean,
do you change it up, though? I mean, do you make a change? I mean, this kind of goes back to maybe being a little scared, do you know what you have in Brad Jones? You don't necessarily know what you have in Barrington, Jamari Lattimore. I know Lattimore's a little different position in base, but do you mix it up?
In the 3-4, right, Lattimore's behind Jones on the weak side. Barrington's behind Hawk on the strong side. And when Jones got hurt in that final exhibition game, they put Lattimore in for him. Okay. So he would be, if they stick according to their deal, he would be the next guy. If they want to make a change in the dime backer, could Barrington. Be Hawk, could be Barrington. Barrington can run. All right, everybody gets exposed against that Seattle Marshawn Lynch run game. I mean, and those guards for Seattle, Sweezy and Carper, they really played good. I was amazed because they're not great guards. I mean, as long as Brad Jones is healthy, I don't see them making a change this week. Maybe somebody would get a few snaps. I mean, A.J. Hawk was, I can't say he was any better. He was shoved and knocked around too, and he didn't show much speed to the sideline, but it was mostly just the heavy-duty stuff at the point of attack. And when there's not people, keeping people off A.J. Hawk, blockers, he's pretty pedestrian.
This is that balance that Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy have kind of dealt with in decisions years past. I mean, they've stuck with guys. They've stuck with Mason Crosby. They've stuck with James Jones as a 2-3 receiver when he had a lot of drops back in the Super Bowl run. Even T.J. Lang, the start to his career, did a little too much off the field, and they've stuck with him, and now he's a core player. So there is history that when they do stick with players, it turns around. It works out. They become regular starters, contributors on this team. But I'm sure there's also been cases where they stick with players a little too long, half a season too long, a season too long. With Brad Jones, that's the decision you have to make here if you're Green Bay, right? I mean, you gave this guy a contract extension recently. You moved on from Desmond Bishop. You went with the more athletic three-down linebacker type that can play in today's NFL. Tom Silverstein, our colleague, wrote a good column about that in our season preview. But right now, you do have an option, two options, as we just mentioned, in Barrington and Lattimore, two young linebackers. I thought Barrington showed a lot of good things in the exhibition games. Maybe out of any backup on that defense, he's ready to step in. You just got to know when to pull the trigger and when not to, I guess.
Yeah, they got to think about it. There's no question. That Carl Bradford, I mean, who knows? At the end of the year, he might get a look in there. Who in the heck knows? One player on the run defense, let's just be – I guess we've never really discussed this, but, Jarrell Worthy's on the street So let's just discuss him. He's on the street, traded to New England. Packers didn't get the pick after New England cut him, so there he is, right? I know people think because he was drafted in the second round that he might have some, could be able to contribute here on this defensive line. I just disagree. He can't play the run at all, Tyler. He'd be on roller skates. That was his problem his first year here, and then he tried to change his body around. And when he got hurt, and then he came back last year, and he was so awful against the run in those 10 or 12 snaps, they had to shut him down the rest of the year. He just can't hold up. He's really not an NFL player, and it was a terrible pick.
It all comes back to that 2012 draft class, doesn't it? I mean, I'm watching football yesterday, and Harrison Smith is having a pick six. He has a huge sack, just a complete difference maker in that game for the Vikings. Packers took Nick Perry over to Harrison Smith. Second round, who knows? I mean, Kendall Reyes might have been their target there in the second round. He goes, what, two picks before the Packers take Jarrell Worthy.
Before they traded up for Worthy.
Before they trade up for Worthy.
Yep.
And, yeah, so they'll have Reyes is there in San Diego, regular contributor, regular starter, and then the Worthy is long gone. We just talked about Mike Daniels, Casey Hayward. We'll see. But cut Manning, cut McMillan. That was the referendum on the defense, and 3 years later you want to see results, and it's kind of a mixed bag. All right, well, let's move on to topic number three now. As we said earlier, that game really turned in the third quarter. You have the fourth and five. Rodgers is sacked. Before that, you have the interception off of Nelson's hands. Rodgers put it on himself. He said he was about a foot off. Then you have the fourth and five sack, and then you have the sack safety. Derek Sherrod central to both of those sacks after Brian Bulaga went down. What's this conversation like if Brian Bulaga never gets hurt, Bob? Do they stay in this game?
The line was playing pretty well, Tyler. With the noise against a really good front, they were playing well. They were moving people on the running game early. I mean, there was enough room for Lacy and Starks. They converted on some third and short, I believe. Rodgers had plenty of time. That was not an issue. It's a closer game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. They're not going to win it, but it's a closer game.
The decision to go for it on fourth down was a little surprising at that point of the game. You're down 20-10. You could maybe pin Seattle there.
Yeah.
But McCarthy wanted to take a chance. Didn't work out. Safety, they're kind of backed up on their own end. Well, however you slice it, Brian Bulaga has a sprained MCL. It sounds like he wants to return very soon. The team wants to be cautious with him. I think as we sit here on Monday, it might be hard-pressed that he plays this week. Hopefully we get some more information on that through the week. You can pay attention to the Journal Sentinel on that. But right now, I mean, they're sticking with Derek Sherrod as their next man in at right tackle. We saw what he did in St. Louis, had some problems there. He kind of rebounded, had a good game against Oakland to earn that roster spot, or, you know, cemented, I guess you could say. And then he gets a shot in week one. And, boy, on that faster track against high-quality pass rushers, struggled. Is this, it's kind of the theme of the show here, is this Seattle being Seattle, or is this a sign, hey, got to give somebody else a shot in there at tackle?
Like who?
Off the street.
Uh-uh.
Nobody available?
I haven't researched that, but two scouts said in late August that is the thinnest position, the hardest to find offensive line, not center. I mean, I know there are centers around, so the tackle and guard. I would highly doubt there's anybody as good as Sherrod.
And for what it's worth, you know, reached out to a few available tackles who would seem to be possible options, and they haven't heard from the Packers. So it doesn't seem like there's much sniffing right now.
They'd probably go to Vujanovic.
Yeah.
He knows their system. He does have feet. The kid comes from Division III, Louisiana College. Jeremy Vujanovic does have feet, Tyler. He's a pretty athletic guy. Now, he's not anywhere near ready to play, but is Sherrod ready to play?
Well,
Sherrod, you know, he had about two or three other bad plays in that game, too, where he got beat inside. I mean, it wasn't good. There's no way around it.
Yeah. Well, another option is, and they've been there, done that, you can move TJ Lang outside. You can plug in Lang Taylor at guard. But then you get into the more you shuffle guys around, the more that kind of messes with a little cohesion. I'm sure they'd love to keep that interior intact as long as they can and want Sherrod to succeed out there at right tackle before doing anything else.
You know, if they had Treader, they could put Lindsley at guard and then move one of the tackles out, Lang.
Right.
But they don't have Treader for half the season now. Is Lane Taylor any better option than Sherrod?
At guard as opposed to Sherrod at tackle?
Yeah. Just and as a pure football player, is Taylor better than Sherrod?
I can't answer that. I mean, he looked fine during the summer to me. I mean, you watch these guys closer. What do you think?
Neither one of them were all that confidence inspiring, I wouldn't say.
Okay.
Lindsley was their number six guy, clearly, and he played like it the other day against Seattle.
Yeah,
that was a tremendous bright spot.
Yeah, kind of funny. I mean, that was the national storyline going into this game. The rookie center heading into Seattle, and he held his own. I think that's...
Well, he sure did.
If the Packers are looking for a silver lining, I guess that's one, because they're going to be without J.C. Treader for a long time.
He's a good football player. He's going to be here for 10 years.
You think so?
Yes.
10 years.
I mean, absolutely. Is he... I don't want to say that word. Yes. Is he better than Treader? I don't know.
Yeah.
He might be. Who knows?
Right.
It's a nice problem to have.
Okay, last topic here on the game, and then we'll move along to something else here. But, all right, so it's pretty obvious, a lot like last year with San Francisco. Last 2 years when they played San Francisco, you come out of that game, the bar has been set. All right, what players are on the Packers roster as constructed? And it's not, they can't go out and sign a free agent now. They can't do anything too crazy personnel-wise. Who on this team didn't play, wasn't used properly Thursday night, that could help them close that gap, could help them in a round two situation with Seattle?
All right, we'll look at the D. I'll start, and then I'll go with one name, you go with one, okay? I'll start with Mike Pennell. The guy's, you know, he's 6'4", 333. He was maiming some second and third string centers and guards. Can he do it against the ones? I don't know. Okay, your turn.
Solid word, maiming.
Mame, okay.
Defensively, Devon House. I mean, Joe Witt said that House played as well as any cornerback on the roster through the summer. Didn't play it all in the game. Was cornerback the problem against Seattle? No, but House is a player that could find a role eventually in this defense and be a contributor. But as far as Seattle specifically goes, I'm going to stick with Barrington.
Okay.
I think that as the dime linebacker and possibly more, he's a difference maker. I think you saw it there in the exhibition games, not the preseason games. The exhibition games.
Thank you.
He can blitz. He can cover. You know, at South Florida, he played all the linebacker positions. At some point, I don't know when, the Packers might be thinking about giving somebody else a shot there at inside linebacker.
How about 91, J-Ron Elliott? At some point, he's going to get some snaps, and deservedly so. I want to see the guy. All right, let's go to the O, Tyler. You got somebody who can come on and do something?
He was injured, but Brandon Bostic, you mentioned it in your rating the Packers. I thought it was a great point. They didn't have that 6'3", 6'4", threat down the middle of the field to take advantage of some things. At tight end, I mean, Andrew Corliss, Richard Rodgers, from an athletic, physical standpoint, they can't do what Brandon Bostic potentially could do as a threat down the seam. That the middle of the field just wasn't exploited. Maybe some of that had to do with what Seattle was doing, but they could have used Bostic.
Good point. Very good point. How about what if they would have turned Jeff Janis loose over on that right outside against 25?
Oh, that would have been a great matchup. See if he can burn him.
He certainly has got better speed than old Richard.
He does.
He might have got eaten up and intimidated and all that. He probably would have, but at some point Janis is going to play.
That's interesting. Yeah, at what point does Jeff Janis turn that corner? I mean, we see the raw speed. Nobody's faster than Jeff Janis on a football field. Yet you also see Aaron Rodgers all over him after running a couple of routes the wrong way at practice. When does he turn that corner? When does he help this team? Because they gave him a roster spot over some pretty good players.
There's a lot of stuff going on, right, Tyler, with all these hand signals and no huddle, route adjustments. I mean, I really don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But talk about a remarkable turnaround. I mean, here's a guy who had shingles, who was having trouble breathing, who isn't even playing the first couple weeks. I thought it was the Charles Johnson redux, and we just weren't even going to see the guy play. And really, from the moment he practiced, outperformed And it was a crowded group. I mean, Kevin Dorsey, Miles White, Alex Gillette, Chris Harper. I mean, there's a lot of receivers there that he outperformed.
Tyler, why don't we just pause 1 second here and spend a minute on Miles White, okay? You know, the access that young man gave you from Louisiana Tech, previously Michigan State, why don't you just explain a little bit the history of that story? I'm referring to this, I don't know, 150 inches. It was an epic story, a fantastic, I hope, award-winning story for you, Tyler. And that was right on the day of the Kansas City game. It ran. So how did you do this thing?
Oh, thanks a lot, Bob.
First, you got it.
Nice words.
Unreal.
Well, I mean, boy, like you said, I mean, first, you got to thank Miles White for just giving fans, giving readers a window into what it's like to be a player on the bubble here.
Yeah.
It's a world that I don't think a lot of people realize that their lives kind of hinge day to day, practice to practice, drop to drop. I mean, there's so much on the line for these players. And the NFL is, I guess, the impetus for the story is just thinking, you know, the NFL is unlike these other sports leagues. There's fallback options in the NHL, in the NBA, MLB. Hmm. There's other outlets for these guys. I know there's more players on the practice squad, and the Packers call the developmental squad, whatever they want to there. But there really isn't another league, another option for these players. So Miles White going into year two, developed a pretty good relationship on the beat with him, and he was willing to kind of enlighten readers on what he's going through on and off the field. And hopefully they benefited from it to just see a guy who's a dad, who's got a son, who has a life to support here on the bubble. And in his whole thing all summer was let the game come to him, relax, let go. He admitted last year he was stressing too much. He's staying up late at night. You know, one drop, you kind of called it a vicious cycle. You make one mistake, it eats at you all practice. You think about it for the next day, and it just kind of keeps going on and on. He let go this summer, and I think it was genuine in that he attacked it with a different mindset. Started really hot, in those one-on-ones. He's burning Jarrett Bush, easy feat. And then that setting, Jeff Janis kind of came on, and you could just see the tide turning a little bit, that competition. And he's still around. You know, he's on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they need a wide receiver in a pinch, he gets that call up here or elsewhere. But, you owe it to Miles White to just kind of opening up and sharing this experience because it's a very, very stressful environment for these guys. Jake Stoneburner was great too in saying that it sucks. I mean, this last week he's blunt. It sucks because you don't know what the coaches are thinking, what anybody's thinking, and your life is going to turn just like that. And it can.
And he's long gone. He was put on IR with some phantom injury and then waived off IR, injury settlement. He's not a bad player, and he's just gone. The way these existences end, huh?
Yeah, just gone. I mean, it's funny that Ted Thompson kind of scolded the media for making roster projections in the middle of training camp, and how dare everybody predict the 53 when they're pretty ruthless themselves with players.
Gotta be. I mean,
and that's the nature of the beast.
It's a big boy league, as Ted has often says that too.
It is. It is. But yeah, thanks for bringing that up. It was great to get to know Miles White. And you've known him in the past, too, with the problems he went through at Michigan State, basically getting kicked off to restart. So we'll see what happens. I know a few readers were emailing me wanting to catch up with him and kind of see where his mindset's at now. So we'll see him. He's on the practice squad.
Yep.
All right, well, let's get into you mentioned it earlier in the podcast, Bob, but I love it every year in our Packers preview section, the 1-53, and it's one of those things that readers might misconstrue a little bit. It's not necessarily the 53 best players on the team ranked. It's the 53 players on the team ranked in importance.
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with, what kind of depth there is behind them. A guy like Sam Shields, he's got a bunch of players behind him. So if he gets injured, his loss is not that fatal. So Aaron Rodgers has been one every week, every year since he's become the starter. And we discussed Mike Daniels earlier. I had David Bakhtiari number six. Now, obviously, he's not a better player than Sitton or Lang right now, who went off at 8 and 9. But at left tackle, if he were to go down, what are you going to do at left tackle? Well, it's Sherrod. The drop off there is like a cliff. So I don't know. I have kind of fun doing it. I mean, it takes a long time to spend a couple hours really thinking it and moving guys around back and forth. And then the summation is just kind of what the guys had shown the last 6 weeks.
So is there a player when you did this list that almost you surprised yourself at how high you put him or how low you put him when you really look at this big picture?
Well, certainly Mike Daniels. I mean, we discussed that. But to go number two on Mike Daniels, I thought about this long and hard. I even ran that by you, I think I did.
Yeah, we were talking on the sideline there. You asked me to guess who number two was. I thought it'd be Bakhtiari for that very reason you mentioned there.
Yeah. I'm high on Bostic. I got him 22. He would have been higher had he not been injured for the first, month or whatever it's going to be. You always worry about the kicker and punter, what to do with them. I had him 31 and 32 this year. Casey Hayward's way down at 33 again, because there's such depth at the position. I don't know. That's about it.
What did you make of Casey Hayward's first game back from all his hamstring problems last season?
Seemed okay. I thought he tackled okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really significant, I didn't think.
And while we're in the secondary, where did you have Ha-Ha Clinton Dix? You got it right in front of you.
28.
Hot and cold. Some wild highs, wild lows for him in that opener.
Yeah, Morgan Burnett 16, high 23, and Clinton Dix 28. Yeah, you're right. I mean, some real up and downs, had problems in coverage, nice tackles. Probably should have made that interception. All in all, it was okay. Yeah.
Played a lot. Did he play more snaps than what you expected?
I had no expectations. I just didn't know what they were going to do at that position, How about you?
Yeah, I was surprised that he played as much as he did, but you can see why. I mean, they're going to have mistakes, but at least he's around the ball a little bit.
Yeah.
He brings a little physicality to that environment, even with the missed tackles, of course, but did some decent things.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've been stretching for a silver lining here and there on this podcast. There's not many of them out of that game, but okay, last topic here, and then we'll get into questions. Colt Lyerla, Bob, over the weekend, ex-Packer, tight end, wasn't around very long, but he was arrested back in Oregon under suspicion of driving under the influence. The sergeant on scene suspected it was either high on some type of drug or possible medication, and I guess they'll sort out the details. But my gosh, 11 days after the Packers reach an injury settlement with a player who's had problems in the past, troubles in the past, he goes home and gets into those troubles again. It's going to be tough for Colt Lyerla to find a job in the NFL right now.
It's too bad. I mean, talking to him, I liked him. He's outspoken. He's bright. He's willing to answer every question. I really liked the guy.
Right.
I mean, he was funny. He was a bit of a loner. There's no question. I could see that he'd be a follower, as your story described him as, I believe, this summer. The Packers, they made a great call moving him off of that IR and injury settling with the guy. Even if they wanted him next year, they knew the guy hanging around town, there would be so much temptation to get into trouble. And sure enough, as you found that story, he gets busted for drugs in Oregon on Saturday night, I believe. When they signed the guy after that rookie minicamp cattle call, I was going on vacation, and I just couldn't believe they signed this guy. I mean, he had 3, 4, 5 transgressions or just terrible mistakes within the last year, year and a half. And the outpouring of criticism and heat I took from Twitter's generally younger audience, you would say?
Correct.
Okay. Everybody just ripping me for not approving of a second chance for this person. But it's not – pro football is not a democracy. I mean, you got pride. You got organizational reputation at stake. And he had 4 or 5. You want to give a guy a 6th chance? And I never met Colt Lyerla, but I had talked to 6 to 8 or 10 scouts about him, and I just assumed he would relapse. It was too much of a chance. Yeah. He was a good guy when he was here, but he's out of work and for 10 days. It would have happened in Green Bay. Sure, as we're sitting here right now.
Well, if a guy's just hanging around at IR.
And then there's egg on the face of this organization, and I know there's fans who really don't think about these kind of things, but if you're following the Packers, you don't want that kind of shame heaped on your organization. At least I don't assume you do. I mean, is winning all that matters? To me, it's not. That's I don't think you'll win at all costs with people who are going to have problems off the field. The Packers have been fortunate that they haven't had a whole lot of off-field problems. And to bring Lairilla onto their roster, I thought it was a risk. I was shocked they took it, that Ted Thompson decided to take that.
And they've kind of removed themselves from that risk now with the injury settlement.
They're obligated to zero. He's out of their hands, out of their and Russ Ball, Mike McCarthy, Ted Thompson, for making that decision, very, very wise to get him out of town 10 days ago.
And it's not exactly comparing apples to apples here, but, I mean, just in terms of when you give a guy a chance, when do you take a chance on a player, you see the Packers don't take that chance, and a team like Seattle might be willing to take a chance like that. How do you know when to do it, when not to do it? Where do you draw those lines?
Well, let's go to Marshawn Lynch, okay? That's an example of that. Now, Tyler, you were around Lynch out in Seattle, right?
Right.
And I was around him at the Super Bowl that week, I mean, during the whole media hassle. So Green Bay considered trading for him at the trading deadline in 2010, right? And Buffalo then got him, Buffalo traded him to Seattle for a 4 and a 5, as it turned out. This guy comes from the ghettos of Oakland. Now, even now, I received emails since the Seattle game saying, well, you know, see, Ted blew that. What would he look like in a green and gold uniform, this and that? But you do not know the circumstances. Last year at the Super Bowl, I talked to Sherman Smith. Now, this guy is the running back coach for Seattle. He's been in the league 20 years. He is a dignified, respected, he's an incredible assistant coach. I've known this guy for a little bit and talking to him. And I asked him about Lynch and how they handle Lynch. And, you know, Pete Carroll's taken a lot of chances on players with character problems. And I said, well, what if he would have gone to Green Bay, Sherman? Now, I know you're obviously biased on this, but how do you see it? And this is a guy who's been in the league a long time. And he said, I believe Green Bay would have been tougher for him. I don't know if it's so much the town. I just think the environment we've got with Pete, the way we do things, that makes a big difference for Marshawn. Marshawn's a little different. Pete doesn't make a big deal out of it as long as it's not a distraction. I don't know how the Green Bay Packers would have handled him. In Green Bay, Tyler, you can just, in a second here, you describe the atmosphere in Seattle, but we know Green Bay is it's a small town. It's a very disciplined program from McCarthy and Thompson on down. It's better to be seen than not heard. It is a different world in Green Bay than it is in Seattle, correct?
As Thompson said at the combine, the last thing that they say in the draft room before taking a player is, how does player A fit into our locker room? And they reach a decision there, and that's probably a big reason they avoid a lot of trouble. I mean, there hasn't been a player arrested here since November 2011. They don't have anything close to Richie Incognito situations going on. So, yeah, I think that's discipline. That search for character is very high on the priority list.
Not every player fits every town. And somehow Lynch is on the West Coast. He's near his roots in Oakland. He can go back and, you know, see his family and friends without having a cross-country trip. And he can get lost in Seattle. It's hard to get lost in Green Bay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it wouldn't have worked, but I'm not saying it would have either. And no fan out there can accuse Thompson and go back and start rewriting history. You don't know it would have worked in Green Bay. Sorry.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a guy in Buffalo. I mean, I'm from the Buffalo area myself. Mm-hmm. Had a pretty nasty hit-and-run situation going on there. And the allegations of a hit-and-run that kind of seemed to just go away. Gosh, you heard the reports from Buffalo police of him sneaking liquor into bars. Just kind of things that wouldn't really fly, I guess, in the Green Bay, Wisconsin environment.
Did you discuss the music in the locker room?
So Marshawn Lynch, to backtrack, he didn't talk to the media last year, which I, you know, to outsiders might say, well, that's fine. If you don't want to talk to a reporter, then so be it. Well, contractually, they have to talk to the media once a week. They have to speak after games. He didn't do it. He speaks at the Super Bowl. I say speaks in quotes.
Right.
Everybody remembers that scene. So he was fined $50,000, and basically he appeals it. The league tells him, okay, you're off the hook. But if you do the same thing again next year, it's $100,000. So starting week one, this was the first time he had to speak to reporters. In Seattle, TV cameras aren't allowed in the locker room. So that's one difference with Green Bay. Wow. So they're not in there anyways, but there are radio people in there. This is what drives them nuts. Marshawn Lynch cranks his stereo in his locker to full blast. And I mean, we talk about music all the time. I'm all for a little rap. Hey, I love Eminem, Lil Wayne, Jay-Z. This was rap I never heard before. I mean, we are talking dark, dark lyrics here, folks. Cranked to full blast. So these radio reporters, I mean, drives them nuts. They can't use any of this stuff. You can't have N-bombs and F-bombs and MF this, MF that on your radio broadcast. I was there, Tom Pelissero from USA Today, a couple local reporters. We're sitting there with recorders, like I'm sitting here right by you, and you cannot hear a word Marshawn Lynch is saying. I mean, you have to really lean in. This music is blaring. Any question about his contract holdout, he was just staring at reporters, not answering anything. Basically, he would only talk about his charity at length. People ask about his charity, he'd only talk about that. And that was that. So he's a different, like the coach said, he is a different cat.
Did it affect interviews all around the locker room?
The
audio quality and the...
A little bit. You know, I guess their locker room is very big. It's very long, very big. Players coming in and out. And that was only, a 3 or 4 minute part of it. And I guess he'd have it cranked at other times as well for the heck of it. But yeah, there were times I was talking to another player and I'm transcribing the interview and I'm just hearing this rap music in the back. And it's different. I guess he just doesn't want any part of the media, doesn't want any part of reporters, wants to stay private. A lot of players want to stay private. You know, I get that. Player, you know, some guys like to speak to reporters, some don't. That's fine. But this was just surreal. I'd never seen anything like it, really.
Okay, thanks.
Have you ever, I mean, you've covered the NFL way longer than me. Have you ever had a player just, you know, that...
I don't
taking that kind of stance.
I don't really think so, Tyler.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, let's get into some questions here, Bob. Thank you for everybody who submitted questions on the Tweet Machine, Bob's favorite device. All right. Okay. This one from Dan Willems Van Dyke, I guess, at DWVD. He asks, are Jamari Lattimore and Sam Barrington that bad from what you've seen in practice? What's holding the coaching staff back from making a change? I talked a bunch about Barrington. Why don't you take that one?
It's a tough position to evaluate. You know, you're standing around there all summer long. You know, you got all these people in front of you. It's in the middle of the line. It's a tough position to evaluate. I don't know. I mean, these coaches want to win. I assume they're playing the best people. Barrington, I feel he's their number three. I think he's better than Lattimore. And before long, he'll get a shot. Anything you want to add, Tyler?
I agree. I mean, if the trend continues, you do have to try somebody else. How about this one from at Roadkill Special?
At Roadkill. Okay, let's go. All right. How much will Mike Pennell play versus the Jets? How long before Brett? Okay, let's stick with just Pennell, okay?
Well, you mentioned him as a player that they didn't utilize in the Seattle game that could help down the road. Boy, you have to think that he gets an opportunity. Maybe starting this week against the Jets, a run-heavy team. The Jets ran the ball 34 times. They passed it 29 times. You know they're going to come at you with Ivory, with Chris Johnson, Blyle Powell. Mike Pennell is, you know, we haven't seen him play in this kind of setting. He's an undrafted rookie, but he is a, 330-pound guy. He's wide. He's huge. He had a great exhibition season. You have to think that he gets a shot at some point.
Yep.
Okay. I think that they probably, like you mentioned, LaTroy Guyon looked a little better toward the end of the game. He's probably still their nose tackle for now, you would think.
Yeah.
But maybe Pennell works his way into the active roster.
Yeah, unless they're plunging ahead with this 4-3 and they don't feel they need a big man up to play it.
Okay, how about this one from Tom Vandenbroek? Yeah, it says Randall Cobb lost a step.
Well, he came off a tough injury, but, I mean, I've never timed him in the 40. It'd be all just anecdotal or observational, and I can't really say.
The one thing I'll just say about Randall Cobb is, you know, Mike McCarthy said Seattle's unscouted looks were better than our unscouted looks, and he's obviously referring to Percy Harvin and the different things they did with Percy Harvin, and a player who Green Bay just didn't see at all last year in Seattle's offense, barely at all. When things kind of got stagnant for Green Bay offensively last year, or I guess 2 years ago, they would do different things with Randall Cobb. You'd see him in the backfield. You'd see him moving around. You know, they didn't really try anything too creative with him at Seattle, where, I don't know, I guess down the road, I would think that maybe they start using him in different ways. I mean, you look at Cordarrelle Patterson with the Vikings. He had more rushing yards than Adrian Peterson in their win against the Rams. Mm-hmm. He's that kind of threat. Cobb can be that kind of threat in Green Bay. They use him that 67-yard run against Detroit last year, open things up. I think that doesn't really answer his question, but just an observation.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to a couple more quick ones, Bob.
Okay.
All right, we just talked about it, but one-word answer from Zach Report at Daily Dope Sheet. He asks, is Colt Lyerla's career over after his recent missteps?
Well, this is number 5 maybe on his hit parade. What's the difference between 4 and 5? Not necessarily. It's not necessarily over. It's the NFL.
All right, here's
a lot of owners are willing to, and GMs are willing to keep giving people half a dozen chances.
How many people outside of the Green Bay know about Colt Lyerla, the football player? How many people could really even judge him on his OTAs, minicamp, and 1 week of training camp?
There's no tape on the guy.
There's no tape.
People could have gone, because there was paid admission for the practice at Lambeau Field that night, there could have been scouts in those bleachers. Other than that, nobody, they're not allowed to go to Packer practices because they're free to the public. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw him play in Green Bay. I talked to one team, and within a day's drive of Green Bay, they didn't cover that practice. So I don't know.
You're the one that had the possibility of him as a fullback in Green
Bay.
Yeah, could that still be on the table
for Green Bay? I just don't see him coming back here now.
I agree.
I mean, they dodged the silver bullet here.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
They just better thank their lucky stars and never think that name again.
All right. Okay, here we go. From Handsome Pete right here. He asks,
all right, with all the missed tackles, Tyler, do physical players like Barrington and or Sean Richardson deserve a look?
I think so. I mean, there were a lot of missed tackles out there, Bob. I mean, talk about a tale of two teams. I mean, Seattle, they kind of rewire, they change up all their tackling drills in practice, and they look like they picked up right where they left off in the Super Bowl against Denver. Green Bay, you know, and they were a better tackling team, I guess, the last couple years since 2011. 2011 was rough.
They slipped back last year, Tyler.
They slipped back last year, but they were better in 2012.
Yes.
Last year wasn't as bad as 2011, was it?
Yes, I agree.
I don't know. I mean, I just think you have to try different players if something's not working. Mix around, see what you have. And he mentions Barrington. He mentions Richardson. I thought Clinton Dix might be a player you see more of. At least he'll stick his nose in there on the run. And you might have to live with some mistakes, though, in the passing game.
All right, listeners, they're dying for some more music from the Black Keys.
The Black Keys. All right. You're done? Signing off?
I think so, yeah.
All right.
So thanks for listening.
Thank you, folks.
To modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.